Welcome back to issue 37 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that got stranded on a desert island and had to survive the only way it could, and is now known as the Green Coconut. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray.
I am Groot, also known as David McVeigh. How are you?
I know what you've been reading.
A lot of it.
We'll talk about that in a moment, but first of all, in this issue, DC takes the lead again. While Marvel teases a bunch of new titles, then the new X-Men movie's revealed, Thor the Dark World gets a new villain, and your favorite, Guardians of the Galaxy, gets a new writer for the film. Plus, of course, our kick-ass pick of the week, Get Jiro by Anthony Bourdain and Joel Rose. It's a DC Vertigo title. But first, as always, our vintage clip of the week. Now, this is a very short one, but what it lacks in length, it makes up for in quality. Here we go.
Lex Luthor has Superman trapped. He's using kryptonite to destroy his powers.
Now you'll tell me why Superman peanut butter tastes so great.
Never. So fresh roasted, so creamy, so yummy, that its secret will be mine, all mine. I foiled again! Just wait, Superman, I'll find out.
Superman peanut butter. Its strength is its great taste.
Oh boy, they really did whore out that character for a while, didn't they?
Oh yeah. That was, in case you couldn't guess, for Superman peanut butter. Its strength is its great taste. From about 1981, I think that was. So,
oh, good Lord.
Yeah. We've got a bit of a food theme going this week, so I thought I'd look for an old food commercial. There's a bunch of them out there. There was one with, like, you know, Batman and Robin and Superman hocking cereal, and there's a couple of Superman peanut butter ones as well. But I'll save those. There's an anti-smoking one as well, but I'm saving that for a very special week.
fair enough.
Now, that's what I've been watching, but what if you... I know what you've been reading, David, but go on, tell us.
All right, look, I can understand now wholeheartedly why Kevin Feige, however you pronounce his name. I know why he's so excited now, because I have read the full 25-issue arc of Guardians of the Galaxy, and I can attest that it is awesome. And I have lost you, Richard.
You haven't lost me at all.
There you are.
Pause briefly in the awesomeness of Guardians.
I want to read you a quote from Guardians of the Galaxy. This is this one really struck me, because I said last week that Rocket Raccoon was becoming my favorite character. And there's a quote. This is actually from issue 24 of the 25-issue run, where Jack Flagg, they're in awe because the big monsters are coming out. And Jack Flagg says, "So what do we do?" And Rocket Raccoon responds with, "Well, Jack, you stand there and say, 'Gee, Rocket Raccoon, I'm so glad you brought that unfeasibly large cannon with you.'"
Nice.
And of course, that I am Groot line from the beginning of the show is because the walking tree that you see in that concept art that has been kicking around is named Groot. And all he says in the entire book, the only words that ever come out of his mouth are, "I am Groot." And it seems to mean everything. So it is well worth a read. It actually has a really good sense of humor. And it's a really great story, too. The story arc of the entire thing basically revolves around the idea that there are rips in space, and the Guardians are out there trying to close the rips and stop whatever's coming through.
That sounds like a good plot for a film.
Absolutely, and I think that they are onto a winner with this. I think that the concept of this is great, and it's also set in it is set in our era. It's not the future. So when these comic books were written, it was 2008, and they keep referring to the fact that it's 2008. And at one point, they actually teleport in to talk to the Fantastic Four, which is funny in its own right, because they have no idea who they are. So
that's great.
So it's very funny. So they're off in deep space in the doing, as Jack Flagg would say, "I hate this cosmic stuff," doing the cosmic stuff all the time, but they are actually in our time frame. So there is that whole crossover with the Avengers in the movies and all that sort of stuff. So it is very interesting book, and well worth reading.
Well, here's my challenge. Last time I said, "Oh yeah, I'll go off and catch up with all the Avengers in 1 week," and then I did it.
Yep.
28 issues. I'm going to do the same with Guardians 25 issues before next week.
you'll finish it in a couple of days. It flies. Yep. It flies by. My big challenge now is that there is backstory to this, and apparently it's in like the Nova series and stuff from the same era, and there are some miniseries. I've got to go off and find all this stuff now.
Well, I've had a huge week as well. It's been, there's about 6 or 7 new number ones that came out this week. Well,
tell me, do tell.
And well, one of the big ones, and this is a must read, and I'm making it my pick of the week, people, is the new Hawkeye.
Oh, yes. I want to read this.
It's look, I would rate it as highly as Mark Waid's debut issue of Daredevil.
Wow. That's some talking.
And the art style is very similar too. It's by David Archer with a great coloring by Matt Hollingsworth. And it's got that sort of, you know, gritty and slightly retro look to it.
I love the cover art.
The cover art's magnificent. It's really simple geometric shapes.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
And it's really good. And the whole book is the opening couple of panels, a Hawkeye falling from a building, saying that, you know, he knows he's messed up. He's basically recovering from, you know, massive breaks in the first episode, in the first issue. And it's basically about him in New York and, you know, about Clint Barton rather than about Hawkeye. And obviously they're building up to, you know, getting him back in the game. But they really keep mentioning this fact that he's just an archer and he constantly has to work at being one of the big guys. And it's just so well written, and it does what Daredevil did, which was get back to Matt Murdock the Man.
So this is kind of feeding on from then Avenging Spider-Man with his
guest
spot where he's constantly training.
Exactly. It's exactly that same sort of vibe. And it's tapped into that part of Hawkeye's brain. And I think, you know, this is exactly the sort of book you need to spin off a successful Hawkeye series after his, you know, rise in popularity again because of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is exactly how you do it. Complete contrast to Green Arrow, which came out this week, which is still a pile of crap.
I really hope that they can do something with Green Arrow because I've fast lost interest in it. So.
Oh, he's just running around in China at the moment with I don't know what's going on there. He had a holographic arrow gun of some kind this week. Now, a couple of other new ones that I'll quickly mention. Daredevil came out this week as well, which was amazing still. Look, if Hawkeye hadn't come out this week, it would have been the best book this week as always. But a couple of new number ones. Before I talk about one that really, really annoyed me this week, Harvest is a new series, a new 5-issue series by Image Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is Image's year with, you know, Fatale, Saga, Mind the Gap, Revival. It's been a huge year for them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a new one about this doctor who's slowly being drawn into, or rather quickly being drawn into, this sort of black market organ kind of removal scheme. But at the same time, he seems to be slowly losing his mind because he's completely alcoholic and off his head on drugs most of the time. And it's just so well written and so well. Like, I don't even know where this is going to go. That's what I love. But the first issue sucked me in completely, and I have no idea where it's going to go. It's by AJ Lieberman with some amazing art by Colin Lorimer. So it's just definitely worth a look. Another great Image number one. Really kind of, it's got a sort of a noirish sort of feel to it as well.
Yeah, I have Harvest sitting here because it really piqued my interest, and I thought, oh, I must read that. I just haven't had time because of Guardians, but I am going to catch up on that very soon.
Now, I'll just mention two more very, very quickly. One of them was, actually three more because I want to talk about one in a little bit more detail, which is there's first X-Men, which came out this week, which is the new Neil Adams, Christos Gage book about the X-Men before the X-Men. And this kind of retconned things a little bit, presupposing that Wolverine actually went around trying to help kids out before he met Charles Xavier. So, but this is weird because I always thought that Wolverine was the wild beast that was only tamed when he met Professor X.
I actually read this as well, and yeah. I actually didn't like it.
I couldn't stand it.
No, I actually, the fact that it was Wolverine and Sabretooth was too many shades of the Wolverine movie for me to start with. Mm. And I hate the fact that they've gone back and tried to retcon it so far. And the fact is that Wolverine at that point, we've got him trying to help Charles Xavier, for goodness sake.
Who's denying that he's a mutant?
Yeah, this doesn't work. This doesn't work for me at all.
The fact is, because, like, you know, I always loved the story arc that Wolverine or Logan was a wild man. He's basically, you know, two shades away from being a wild animal, until he, you know, he was won over by the goodness of the Smurfs, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's basically always been, you know, everyone's won over by the goodness of the Smurfs eventually.
Ah, Smurf it.
Smurf you. That's how we get around this being a clean show.
Absolutely.
Everything's Smurfy. But it's kind of... you know, it's very much like the comics sort of imitating films in a way, because it's kind of gone back for that retro X-Men First Class kind of era. Mm. But at the same time, it's sort of it's too inconsistent, and I mean that visually as well. I mean, Neil Adams' art. This is the guy that did, you know, the great Green Arrow, Green Lantern run that we spoke about weeks ago. His art just doesn't gel with a modern comic sensibility, and Wolverine looks like a blocky Neanderthal at times, you know.
It's just, and Sabretooth actually looks kind of thin.
Yeah, it's a really odd style, but that's really not the worst part about it. I mean, I could forgive the worst art for a great story, and this is not a great story.
And it also intrigues me that they've actually come out with this book, considering that we've got that book on the horizon that's coming out, which is where we bring back all the original X-Men back in time or whatever it is. Remember?
Yes, yes.
So
yeah.
I don't understand what Marvel is doing with these characters. It's like they're kind of confused as to what they're doing with the X-Men.
No, I really, really don't get it. But there's an interesting story coming up in the film world that gets me very excited. So we'll talk about that in a moment. Two other ones I want to talk about really quickly. One of them was a sense of deja vu. Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe.
I haven't read this yet. I've got it sitting here waiting.
Now, everyone's been raving about how wonderful this is, but I kind of get the feeling it's people who don't read a lot of comics or people who haven't, who don't remember Punisher kills the Marvel Universe, because in all the reviews I've read for this, none of them have mentioned Punisher kills the Marvel Universe.
Weird.
Which is really odd. And I think that was my first thing. It was like, you know, oh, hi, we've met before, haven't we?
This is like the Amazing Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
Hey, there we go.
But the thing is, it takes itself so seriously. And to me, this is just like pure fan service for the, you know, fanboys who kind of yearn for mid-90s holographic foil cover kind of stuff again, you know. It doesn't, like, you know how when we spoke about Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe, it was kind of like this really stupid over-the-top story that kind of had this nice emotional ending to it. This kind of, it's got Deadpool going mad, which is quite interesting. But it's also, and it's also got, like, the way they incorporate the Watcher into this is quite clever. But I don't know, it just lost me immediately, this book.
Well, I'm gonna read that one too, because I'm really curious to see how they're gonna make this different. But by the sounds of it, doesn't sound like they do. So I'm curious.
The one book I'm interested to know whether you read this week or not was Action Comics. Did you catch up with the latest one?
Now, is this the one that boasts on the cover that the secrets of the uniform are revealed?
And no,
then,
this is the one.
And they don't? No, that was last month.
That was last month. This is Man of the People No More.
No, I haven't read that one yet. I've got to admit that my New 52 reading has been limited to World's Finest and one other, but I can't remember what it was now because it didn't interest. Oh, it was Earth 2. That's right.
Okay, I've got to say, all I'm going to say about this book, I thought it was one of the dumbest books I've read this week. This is Grant Morrison at his lowest point.
Oh, dear.
This is an issue where we find out that Superman can perform complex internal surgery after reading medical textbooks in 5 minutes, and his thumb is sharper than any scalpel. And he has his own X-ray vision, of course.
And this is why Grant Morrison is retiring from doing capes.
And also, he can read the contents of a flash drive without using a computer.
Well done. That's a good trick.
So these are new things that are part of Superman's origin story in the New 52.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I read something recently. Oh, actually, did you mention it last week? Maybe it was you that mentioned it last week. Grant Morrison is retiring from writing capes.
I don't know if I did, but...
Oh, maybe you didn't. Maybe it was somewhere else I read it. But yeah, but basically he's going to start going off on basically his own stuff. You know what I mean? Like the aliens and dinosaurs and all that sort of stuff. It looks like he's had enough of capes, so he may be retiring from capes.
Yes, well,
not a moment too soon by the sounds of it.
No, I think his best work is being done in non-capes, or some of his best cape work is behind him.
Makes me wonder, though, what will happen with, although he's not actually writing the new Batman Incorporated, is he? Yes, he is.
Yeah, he is.
So it makes me wonder what
will happen. And that's all right. I'm actually quite enjoying that.
It makes me wonder what will happen with Batman Incorporated, though, because it is kind of his baby.
Maybe he's not going to start any more capes books.
Maybe. We'll see.
Anyway, should we move on to some comics news?
Oh, God, that means I need a theme, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
What a scoop!
Bit slow off the mark there.
It's all right. We're getting back into it. Who hasn't been slow off the mark? How's that for a segue?
There you go.
DC Comics this month, or I should say last month, because the figures have come in for July.
Okay.
And look, there's not much in it again, but DC's back out in front.
What prompted that? It would be before Watchmen, wouldn't it?
It was probably before Watchmen. We're looking at the market share again. We're looking at the dollar share. DC Comics is ahead by about 1%, and the same in the unit share. So there's still not a lot in
this. They really just kind of jump backwards and forwards over this line, don't they?
But what was really interesting is that out of the top 10 comic books this month, or last month, I should say, Walking Dead, number 100, took the number one slot.
Does this surprise anybody?
Not when it had 15 variant covers. It doesn't surprise me. I'm sure there were Walking Dead fans who bought all of them.
Yeah.
Which instantly, so every purchase was 15 purchases.
Yeah, no, it doesn't surprise me at all. There was a lot of hype leading up to 100, and 100 is always a milestone issue anyway. So, and this is
true.
Such a popular book.
It is a huge book, but six of the rest of the top 10 were all DC, including Batman, Justice League, Before Watchmen, Ozymandias, Detective Comics, Green Lantern, and Action Comics.
Can I just ask, what Before Watchmen, Ozymandias?
I know.
Of all of them?
out of all the ones that could have sold, that was the one that went. I mean, it's not a bad book, but it's okay. Avengers versus X-Men, obviously, is still doing well for Marvel.
Right.
And in fact, their three top 10 entries were all Avengers versus X-Men stuff.
I can't believe, I'm just having a look down here, number 7 is that AVX versus junk.
I know.
God.
Number 4, what was number 4? I'll have to go back and find out what that is.
Find out who was on the cover of that one, because that's obviously what sold it. Dearie me. Okay, fair enough. Well,
I just thought I'd mention that, because we're always following those numbers. But meanwhile, Marvel has been teasing stuff all week. They've just been sending out little images with just a single word and a creative team on them. So, for example, they've had Ramenda Ramita, Soldier, and my favorite, Poston, Duggan, and Moore, Chimichangas. and things like Fraction and Bagley, Family. Now, I think we knew, like for that last one, Fraction and Bagley, Family, it was fairly obvious that they would be doing a Fantastic Four book.
And I think it's pretty obvious that Romita, that's Captain America.
Absolutely. So Rick Remender and John Romita are taking over Winter Soldier.
Oh, Winter Soldier. Okay, good.
All right. Yeah, and Matt Fraction and Mark Bagley, terrific artist and lovely man, is taking on Fantastic Four. Some of the other ones, that Chimichanga's one is apparently going to be a Deadpool reboot.
I thought it was something you bought off of a taco truck there for a minute, didn't it?
I don't know, but Kieran Gillen and Greg Land are going to be taking on Invincible Iron Man. Jason Aaron and Esad Ribic are taking on Thor. What was that?
I said right. Which one is Thor, though? Is that the Worthy?
The one that's, that's the one that's...
Oh, no, Wade and you, sorry, Indestructible.
No, it's Aaron and Ribic, Worthy. No,
right,
it's Worthy.
Okay, you're Worthy. Okay, well, who's Indestructible?
That's Iron Man, of course. That's Hulk, rather.
Hulk, of course. Sorry,
cool. So we're going to have Mark Wade doing a Hulk book.
Interesting.
with art by Lionel Yu, who did a book that we did not too long ago, and I've forgotten the name of.
Oh, yes, and we liked it too.
Liked it a lot. I'll have to look that up.
We'll look that up. We'll go back and... Oh, my God, I can't believe we've forgotten that. But now my big question is, what is Legacy?
Legacy is... Let me see. That's Spurrier and Hewitt. That looks like it is going to be... And give me a minute while I look this up. Oh, that's X-Men Legacy.
Ah, okay, cool.
I don't know what that's going to be about, though.
I don't know. That might be the one. Is that the one where they're bringing them all back in time?
No, apparently it's possible. It says here on this article, it's also a possible teaser for an entirely new series, possibly dealing with the Avengers, the Legacy Virus, or something else altogether.
Oh, okay, cool. Fair enough. So this is the Marvel Now stuff, is it?
This is all the Marvel Now, because we're getting a new number one every week between late October and February. So most of these ones look like they're coming out in November.
Right. Okay, cool. Sounds like we got some reading to do.
It certainly does, sir. Superior was what Lionel Yu was on.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I'm actually looking it up right now. Yes, there it is.
And he's currently working on Super Crooks.
Super Crooks is Gibbons, isn't it?
I thought it was too. Oh, no, but it says here in his Wikipedia entry that he's worked on Super Crooks.
Oh, now I'm really confused.
Somebody out there, help us out and let us know.
I'm looking up Super Crooks right now. Hold on. I've got that here somewhere. Here we go. Super Crooks number one. Here we go. Super Crooks number one is, Lionel Yu.
There you go.
Oh, man.
So, which means that we were wrong last week when we were talking about Dave Gibbons.
Sorry about that, Dave.
We can't do that,
Oh,
Dave.
Wait a minute. Dave Gibbons, isn't he doing Secret Service?
Yes.
He is doing a Mark Millar book, and I'm trying to remember which one it is. And we thought it was Superior, but obviously we were wrong. It could be Secret Service. I'm just looking it up right now. Hold on a second.
This is fascinating listening
it's
to.
It's gripping radio. What are you talking about?
It is Secret Service. It's
people love this stuff. Yeah, there it is. I see his name. All right.
We can move on to movie news now.
Okay. Whew, we got ourselves out of that little rat hole.
Well, David, I'm going to stop talking for a second. I'm going to let Brian Singer take over for a few seconds.
Here he is.
You mentioned X-Men, and I just had to ask you, because I'm a huge X-Men fan, what can you say about the new film coming out?
I can say it's being written right now, and we'll start shooting in a few months. I don't know when it's the start date. I'll see if Jason knows the start date of it. It's going to be very ambitious. Mm-hmm. It's called Days of Future Past, and it deals with aspects of that comic, but also some very new things. I just don't want to give any of it away. Matthew Vaughn will be directing, and I'm totally excited about it.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I love how he tells you, it's going to be called Days of Future Past. He just throws that out, like knowing that that's not going to get every single comics fan in the world moist.
One of my favorite words, by the way, moist.
I do like that. So obviously this is referring to a classic 1981 comic that was written by Chris Claremont and was drawn by John Byrne and Terry Austin. It's basically a time-jumping saga where the X-Men, it's an alternate future where the X-Men have failed to save the Senator Kelly, and that leads to a future where there's giant sentinels who basically control the US, and mutants are held in internment camps.
And it's awesome.
And it's a very awesome book.
It is a very awesome book. I remember reading that way back when, and I'm pretty jazzed about that.
What really excites me later in that clip... he talks about, and this is over at IGN, we've got the link in our show notes.
Yep.
He talks about possible connectivity between the X-Men universe. And he talks about the fact that, he said Marvel Studios has done it very well, linking all their films together, and he doesn't think it's inconceivable that they could link their films together. To me, that sounds as though if they're doing a movie that's got time travel in it, it sounds entirely possible they could conceivably link up their two Marvel X-Men universes.
That would be very interesting to see them try.
Yes.
There's a lot of inconsistencies between these two universes.
There's a lot of inconsistencies, but don't forget, we've already had Wolverine appear in X-Men First Class.
That's true. So we do have some continuity there. I don't know. And we have the same Mystique.
And we have the same mistake.
Different
exactly.
Actress, but the same Mystique. So, there are definite connections, but it'd be very interesting to see them try this.
So Simon Kinberg's writing that, man. It's going to be directed by Matthew Vaughn. The reason Brian Singer was talking is because he's producing the film. So he's still very much got a hand on the X-Men universe.
He produced X-Men First Class 1 as well.
He did. Yeah. So he's still very much in the game. He's still obviously a fan.
Very good to
know.
Now. Although completely disorganized by the sounds of it. Can you find out when the start date is?
Well, still on Marvel films. In fact, all of this is about Marvel films because DC haven't got anything new this week. Thor the Dark World has got a villain.
Oh, cool.
It is the Doctor.
Oh, which one?
Christopher Eccleston.
Oh, he's a good one for this.
Now, here we allegedly playing Malekith the Accursed.
Oh, very good. That's a title.
Who is the leader of the Dark Elves, of course. he was introduced again back in the comics, I think about the same time, back in the early 80s. He was a character who kind of teamed up with Loki, I think, at various points to help enslave the Earth and all that sort of stuff.
Don't they all?
They all at some stage. So, look, you know, with Tom Hiddleston already confirmed for the sequel, I'm going to love seeing Eccleston and Hiddleston. Well, that's a mouthful. playing off each other. It should be great.
That would be awesome.
I love it. One of the biggest American comic book movies, and like the hero is Australian and the two main villains are English.
And his father's English.
And his father's English as well. So, poor Natalie Portman.
But do we have a Jamie Alexander coming back?
I think she's confirmed.
Good.
Yeah.
We need Sif to have
more
to
friend.
Do. Yeah, our good friend. We need Sif to have more to do.
Yeah, well, look, you know, obviously she plays a big part in the comics later on. So hopefully they're going to set that up.
And you did hear the news that the gentleman who played, what's his name? Who's the guy that looked a little bit like Cary Elwes.
His name's on the tip of my tongue. He plays Fandral or something.
Fandral, thank you. He's actually, he's withdrawn from the film. And he's been replaced by Chuck.
Yes, that's right. He has been. It's Zachary Quinto, is it?
Yeah. Zachary Levi.
Levi, rather.
Levi, So Zachary Levi
is Quinto is Spock.
That's right. So, yeah, Zachary Levi is actually going to be playing Fandral in the new film. So that's very exciting, too.
Yeah, now look, I mean, look, it's not the first time they've had a recast in the Marvel U, but it worked out pretty well for the Avengers.
Yeah. And the Avengers and with the recasting of probably, arguably, the recasting of Rhodey, too.
Yeah, definitely.
In Iron Man. So, Marvel's not... I kind of like that, actually. It's kind of like James Bond, where they say, okay, well, one actor stepped out, we'll just move another one in.
Rather than just, like, taking the character out entirely.
Rather than... Sony, are you listening? Rather than rebooting every time.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. Deja vu.
Finally, just a little bit of news, and this is probably not the name itself won't excite anybody, but with the Guardians of the Galaxy film, they've hired a new writer for this. Now, the guy's name is Chris McCoy, and you won't have heard of him because he hasn't produced a screenplay yet. He hasn't got a credited screenplay out yet.
Hmm.
He is, however, a three-time entrant in the Hollywood Blacklist, which is the list of the best unproduced screenplays currently floating around Tinseltown.
Interesting.
So he's apparently some of his screenplays include there's one called Get Back, which was a I think it was called Get Back, which is basically a time travel comedy with the Beatles,
right?
And he's done a whole lot of like big sci-fi comedy, high concept sort of scripts that he's written. So I think he's just the sort of person that they were looking for to do a high concept, slightly comic, and action adventure.
And that it is indeed.
So, like, I mean, if it sounds like he's the sort of person who could accurately write for an anthropomorphic raccoon.
Definitely. And don't forget the talking Russian dog.
Yes.
It's awesome. You got to read it. And I am Groot.
Now, he's actually taking over from a Nicole Perlman, also who hadn't written a script before or hadn't had a produced screenplay before, who'd actually written a couple of space-themed ones. Like, she'd written one about Challenger, which would have been really interesting. So I'd actually like to see a film about Challenger. That would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
I don't know whether he's just going to take over and write the whole thing, if he's come in to script doctor it or what's happening. But I really like that Marvel's kind of tapping into these sort of, lesser known people. I mean, let's face it. I mean, if you even go back as far as Iron Man, Jon Favreau was not a huge, like he'd done sort of like Zathura and... a handful of other films at that stage. What was that?
Swingers.
Yeah, he hadn't done his big action film at that stage, and now he's made a few of them under his belt, and he's producing the third Iron Man film. I mean, even Robert Downey Jr. was a gamble at the time.
But that, remember, at that time though, that was actually Favreau. Favreau fought for him. Marvel was really worried about that. So,
but if you look at also what they're doing with Captain America. Winter Soldier. The directors for that are the guys who do Community.
That's true.
So they're really thinking outside the box. They're trying to find a good fit. People who just sort of think the Marvel way, I guess.
Yeah, and think about Thor. Thor 2 is actually being directed by a Game of Thrones director.
And the first one was directed by Kenneth Branagh, who you never would have thought saw him in charge of a giant Hollywood blockbuster, but it worked out pretty well.
That's true. The only obvious director they've ever hired up to this point was probably the director for the first Captain America. Joe Johnson, who, yeah, because of The Rocketeer, it's kind of felt like an obvious choice.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but other than that, they've thought outside of the box every step of the way.
And look, you know, it's worked out pretty well.
It has. So we look forward to what they come up with next.
And they got that completely non-geek director, Joss Whedon, for the Avengers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's not known by anybody.
No, he's not done any single thing for the last couple of decades. Has not redefined television in any way.
No.
I think that's it for movie news, David.
It is. And before we move on to our pick of the week, we actually have some feedback. And I thought we would read this because it is actually kind of, it's within theme, I guess. Well, my week's theme anyway.
You've got your theme going, I've got mine.
I got my theme. We got an email from Dan this week who basically said to us, the Marvel Cosmic Universe has been incredible. Capital letters, amazing in the past 5 years. Honestly, while reading it, all I could think about was how I wish the Star Wars prequels were as good as it. If you want to read Guardians of the Galaxy, I highly recommend you first read the Annihilation miniseries and related books, followed by the Annihilation Conquest miniseries and related books. Guardians of the Galaxy can be read on its own, but these are great stories that will give you a lot of background on the characters and how they got together. It would be expensive to get the trades, but all of these books are on Marvel Digital Comics, which I believe is around $60 for a year subscription. It's highly worth it, as long as you don't mind reading comics on your computer. Can't wait to see the Guardians movie. Thanks for all your great work on the podcast. Thank you so much for that, Dan. Now, we should mention that very quickly, what this Marvel Comics, the Marvel Digital Comics thing is. I looked into it a while ago. This is not the same as the stuff coming out on iPads. This is actually a subscription service that you get from the Marvel website, and you actually read them on the website. And they've got this huge library of stuff that you pay a subscription fee, and you can just read whatever you want.
Right.
But it is only on their website. And I believe it's all Flash-based, which is probably why it won't work on an iPad.
Exactly.
I actually didn't know it was still going, because with the birth of digital comics on iPads, I thought that kind of would have taken it away.
Yeah, I would have thought so too. And I'd like to see, I don't think it's available at the moment on the iPad, but a subscription service on the iPad, if it was $60 for a year or something, I'd sign up immediately.
I would be there in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Heartbeat.
Because it's the primary way that I read my comics now, and I never would have thought that. As someone who's been a collector all his life, never would have thought the primary way that I would get into reading comic books again would be through an iPad on a screen, which is such a non-comic-y thing to do.
I know, I agree, and it is actually almost I would hazard to say probably 90% of my comic reading is on a screen now. So it is amazing. Also, an update, by the way, we did subscribe to that Marvel graphic novel collection because Nikki really wanted to, and we've got our first three in. Let me tell you, Extremis looks gorgeous in this printed graphic novel format.
I might have to get these, I think.
They're using really high-quality paper, really high-quality printing. The binding is beautiful. The three of them sitting up on the shelf now just look really nice. It's actually a really good collection for those who are, I think the prime audience here is for people who want to get into comics. For the hardcore collectors, you've got all this stuff already. You probably don't need these. But for those who don't, like my son is really still kind of a novice to comic books, these are a great way for him to catch up on some of this stuff.
No, I think it's great that there's more. They're thinking of more ways to get new readers in, because you know I don't think that the movies have translated into comic coin, and it's a shame, because you know obviously every single movie has about 50 years worth of history behind it. So I think it's great. No, I think it's a great idea. You're right. I probably won't need to get it myself because I've got most of those stories in various formats.
Yeah, pretty much. But do you know what's coming out next month?
What's that?
The Ultimates.
Oh, of course.
In book form. And it's like, I just want to see that, the beautiful printing and everything. And the Ultimates is going to look fantastic. It's really funny you're looking at these, though, because it's like, oh, yeah, we did that on the show. And there's Extremis. We did that on the show.
we pick nothing but the best.
Absolutely. So it'll be very interesting to see what's coming up next, because there's like 60 something issues or something in this thing. So it's going to be going for a while.
David, my spider sense is tingling.
Oh, really? It must be this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
David, this week's pick of the week is, of course, as we said at the top of the show, and we haven't changed our minds since then.
Really?
No. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we just get halfway through the show. You know what? We're not going to do Watchmen this week. Let's just do, you know, Archie Meets Kiss. You know,
but this week we've decided to stick with the sushi.
We're stuck with sushi. We're doing Anthony Bourdain's Get Jiro, also co-written by Joel Rose, with wonderful art by Langdon Foss, with Jose Villarubia.
That's easy for you to say.
It really wasn't. This is, of course, published as an original graphic novel published by DC's Vertigo line, and it definitely is suggested for mature readers.
Yes, there's a lot of violence in this book. We don't have a huge sex quotient, but there is a lot of violence in this book. So
we have some sex, but it's a lot of sex and violence for a book that is about food.
Mm. The basic premise of Get Jiro is in this, it's not even, is it the, yeah, that's the future, but it's kind of the near future.
It says the not too distant future on the back of the book.
Oh, okay. In the beginning of the book, it actually says the future, Los Angeles, or very like it. and basically in this future, all other entertainment basically has gone by the wayside, and everything is about restaurants and food now. And yes. So it's basically food wars, and everything is about who can control all of the restaurants, and the turf wars are all about who controls restaurants. And in the middle of all of this is Jiro running his little sushi restaurant, and he is, quite frankly, the best at what he does. Now, how good is he, Richard? Describe for us his first encounter in this book.
Well, he's a very particular man. he's got a very particular traditional way of serving up sushi, and these three young punks walk in and they can't quite decide what to serve, what they want to order, and they eat it and they're dunking it in soy sauce and they're being generally impolite, so he lops all their heads off with his cleaver. which is, and you kind of, the tone is set for the rest of the book when the cops pull up and say, yeah, well, you know, you got to respect the way.
I love the fact they go, well, cleaners are going to have their work cut out for them here.
It's a very special kind of man, Jiro. You know, and effectively, we'll say up front, this is basically the Yojimbo story.
Yes, and I was going to touch on that. Basically, they are touching on the concepts of Yojimbo. It doesn't do it quite as well as Yojimbo.
No. Or Fistful of Dollars, for those of you who haven't seen the Japanese version.
Yeah. The problem with it is that it doesn't carry through. And the problem I had with the book, I actually found the book really lightweight. It's fun, but I found it really lightweight because it seems like they're going in one direction and then they kind of go, you know, let's do something else.
Well, the reason we refer to it as Yojimbo, because in this big food-obsessed world, there are two warring clans, I guess.
Yeah.
One of them's run by Mother Nature sort of chef. She's all about local, fresh ingredients. And the other one's kind of more of your traditional.
Well, I was about to say, the other one is Bob.
The other one's Bob. You got Rose and Bob.
Yeah.
Bob's your traditional kind of, like, you know, high, you know, three Michelin star chef who kind of runs his things in his own particular way as well. The thing I like about this book in a lot of ways, because I watch with my wonderful girlfriend Susan, we watch a lot of Lifestyle Food Channel.
Right.
So we watch a lot of cooking shows. And I think one of the things that this does comment, and this is co-written by one of the world's leading, you know, popular chefs, is that how obsessed we've all become with food and cooking shows. And, you know, we do treat anyone who has the ability to pick up, you know, a cleaver and can spice something as gods, you know. Yeah. And we let them get away with, you know, sometimes unconscionable behavior. Look at Gordon Ramsay, just because it's entertainment.
Mm.
And this is that, all that taken to its illogical extreme.
This book, I mean, to talk about the violence in this book, there's a part where Bob sends his goons out to get Jiro, basically. And Jiro,
hence the title.
This is early on in the book. This is when they're first trying to make contact with him. The thugs turn up. Jiro basically says, "Go away, you're bothering my customers." And Jiro cuts one of their arms off. And the reaction from the other guy is not, "Oh my God, you cut his arm off." His reaction is, and I quote from the book, he says, "You see that? Nice knife work. Didn't even cut through the bone. Worked his way around it, through the tendons. That's impressive."
I'm looking at the page now.
Yeah. And it goes on to some more expletives later on. And basically he says, "Geez, that was pretty awesome."
Even the guy that Teddy's arm cut off is kind of looking at it curiously and admiring it.
And the book has a lot of that sort of stuff in it, you know?
The artwork, for those of you familiar with his work, is very Jeff Darrow-esque. So Jeff Darrow does artwork very similar to this. But this guy is Langdon Foss. Has done the primary artwork in this. It is a very particular art style. I quite like it. I think it really suits the material. But this is, narratively speaking, as you say, David, a lightweight book. The story is, taken from familiar things like your Jimbo Fistful of Dollars. But it really is often sort of gets caught up in its own agenda and its own, it gets caught up with its own cleverness sometimes.
It also gets caught up with its food. And I know it's a book about food, but when they start, they'll go into a passage, like when he goes to visit the old friend in that nondescript restaurant.
Yes.
And the old friend makes him a meal. We literally spend three pages while the guy makes the food.
Yeah.
And it's this beautiful artwork of this food, but I feel like I'm watching the Food Channel.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it kind of does. It does sort of take you out of the pace.
Oh, it kind of slows you down from the story. That's the problem. And look, I'm with you. I'm a big Food Channel watcher, and I love cooking shows. But I was kind of wanted to know why they were trying to get Jiro rather than why they're making like French cuisine.
Yeah, I do like the way that all the food utensils are employed in this thing as well. Like, I mean, he ends up getting this. Giant thing that's used to gut fish as a samurai sword.
The tuna knife.
Yeah, the tuna knife, yeah. He ended up wielding that like a samurai sword by the end of the film. I also like that there's a sort of protest movement rising where the people are eventually trying to rise up to take back, you know, the city. Because you really got kind of like the inner circle, the literal inner circle of the city where all the top restaurants are and everybody else kind of lives on the outside. And the curious thing about Jiro is that he's deliberately placed himself in the outer rims, yet he's arguably the greatest chef that's ever lived.
And his restaurant is actually very modest.
Mm.
But people all seem to know about him. I was also going to say, there was something else I was going to say about the about the setting. Oh, yeah, one of the things I actually really did like about the book was this concept that reservations at restaurants was like gold. And so everybody's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm going to go to that restaurant. I'm booked in for 3 years from now," and stuff like that. And there's that one little subplot where the guy's being mugged.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, and the thugs grab his phone as they're beating the snot out of him, and the guy goes, "Oh, wait, he's got a reservation at such and such," and they go, "Oh, that's awesome, man," and they give him back his phone and say, "You go, man, that's really amazing."
Let us know what it's like.
Yeah, let us know what it's like, and they send him on his way all bleeding and bruised, and you go, "This is the weirdest thing I've ever read."
And I kind of like that about it, because I like that it obviously isn't taking itself too seriously, but it's got this real kind of surrealist sense of humor to it in that regards. But you're right, it does get caught up in its food too much. Like there is a scene where Jiro is called into Bob's office, and it's basically, you know, he's making him an offer to work with his clan. But you do get two or three pages where, apart from his lovely assistant bending over and showing us her knickers, where they're talking about these really rare kind of worms or something that are only available for a couple of, you know, weeks out of the year, and they're delicious, and he goes into ecstasy eating them. Yeah. And you literally get, you know, a page and a half of him talking about these elvers, baby elvers, that's what they are.
Right.
And there is that kind of thing. And I appreciate this is written by someone who is a foodie and wants people to appreciate the food art. But at the same time, I think some momentum is lost when you when you do stop and steal those razors, because this is actually, after all, an action film, action comic masquerading as a food comic.
Mm. I mean, like, as an example, just after that, that Elders page, he goes to the fish market.
Yes.
And we actually spend, I'm looking at them right now, 4 pages of him just walking through the fish market.
Yeah.
You know, with all the shots of the fish hanging and then people strolling around. Not a word spoken until the very last 2 panels or 3 panels or whatever it is. And you sit there and go, wow, this is just like worshipping the food. You know?
I wonder what the script read like. Fish. I want lots of fish.
More fish. I'm the artist delivering panels going, yeah, yeah, that looks really, really pretty. We need more fish.
Just, I don't think we have enough. Have you done crabs yet? Throw in some crabs.
But look, it's an entertaining read. It's got some really good moments. And I like the way that Jiro starts to play the two gangs off of each other. Very Yojimbo. Yep. I do like, you know, like the planted camera and stuff like that. And a lot of that stuff is very clever. I just don't think they quite see their way through because in Yojimbo, he sets them against each other. He has a master plan. It doesn't feel like Jiro does.
No, and things, both of the writers on this aren't first-time writers. They've written novels and other books before, but I don't know if they've written sequential art before.
Right.
So I think, again, it's one of those things we see where people moving from another medium into comics, they kind of make those rookie mistakes of not quite getting the pacing down.
Yeah, yeah. And look, it's, if it is their first graphic novel, I applaud them and I say it's actually a well-done first effort.
I think it's a marvelous first effort. I think it's and it's really encouraging to see Vertigo doing more original graphic novels like this. I would rather, you know, a dozen comics of this quality, which and look, the artwork is amazing. The writing is pretty good. Like, it's still an entertaining story, you know.
Absolutely.
Even if it's a familiar one, I'd rather see a dozen of these than another X-Men versus Avengers.
If you take it to Vertigo levels, or something like what's the Voodoo Queen called?
Dominic Laveau.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, rather than seeing a new series like that, I'd rather them put their efforts into more one-off miniseries.
Well, exactly. Vertigo's been doing nothing but ghosts, zombies, vampires, and voodoo queens all year.
Mm.
I mean, in fact, their 4 new titles that they've released in the last 12 to 24 months have all been supernatural titles. So I'm all for more original graphic novels like this. And in fact, the book we're doing next week, which we'll talk about a bit later, is DC doing the same thing, their own original graphic novel as well.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it's an art form that we don't see as much of anymore. And it's, you know, which we get so many things where it's going to be like a massive event and the event runs for a year and that's collected into a 600-page trade paperback. And then that's what a graphic novel is for most people. But, you know, there was a heyday when graphic novels were exactly that. They were novels written in a graphic form rather than being a collection of single issues.
Exactly. Rather than being a collection, they were actually their own thing.
And I think that's where a lot of people I think that will be the future of comics. I think individual issues will increasingly become digital.
Yep.
So if you want serialized stuff, you're going to get it digital. The stuff that's going to get printed will be long format stories.
And the thing about graphic novels, even going way back into the 80s when graphic novels first started coming into the forefront, they were always printed on better paper, they were better quality, there was a keepsake nature about them.
And this is a beautiful book.
It is. It's beautifully presented, hardback. It's lovely. It's you know, it's beautiful. And I have to thank you because it was a birthday present, so thank you very much.
Happy birthday, sir.
No, look, it is worth the read just because it's something different. And I really do stand by the fact that if we want comics to grow and we want comics to thrive as an industry, we have to keep trying to do different things.
I think this is definitely worth a read. I honestly, I enjoyed it. I can't say I didn't. I was familiar with the story because I love Kurosawa and I love Sergio Leone. So I've seen this story several times.
And I
got the food jokes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I polished it off in one session. I mean, there's not a boring part in this. You sit there, you are intrigued to know where this is going. And that's a good sign right there.
Yeah.
So,
this is really interesting. I'm just looking up graphic novels while we're on the topic on Wikipedia, and there's a quote here from our bearded man in the cabin, Alan Moore, who believes, and I love this actually, said, "It's a marketing term that I never had any sympathy with. The term comic does just as well for me. The problem is that graphic novel just came to mean expensive comic book. So what you'd get is people at DC or Marvel Comics, because graphic novels were getting some attention, they'd stick six issues of whatever worthless piece of crap that happened to be publishing lately under a glossy cover and call it the She-Hulk graphic novel." which is exactly the problem, and I think it is a marketing thing that, unfortunately, books like this, which are original graphic stories, aren't seen as highly. Honestly, there's no read. This is Anthony Bourdain's latest book.
Yeah,
it's just got pictures in it, and he's a New York Times bestselling author and a television personality. There's no reason why this shouldn't be a bestselling book this week. Except for the fact that it's got pictures in it.
I would like to see more novelists actually try their hand at sequential books.
One of my favorites is Brad Metzler, who did a whole lot of sort of John Grisham-esque sort of books in the last couple of years. Sorry, Brad Meltzer, not Metzler. And he first did a run on comics with, I think it was he did a Justice League series, but his first run was actually on Green Arrow.
Oh, really?
He took over for five issues after Kevin Smith left.
Interesting.
And then he did a series called Identity Crisis, which was fantastic.
Huh.
It was really, really good. And he actually comes back every now and then and does things. He did an arc of Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 8, which we did on the show a little while ago.
Yep.
So he's done some really good stuff over the years, and I think it's someone who actually was a comic book fan, went off and wrote novels, and then slowly built his way into having a steady roster of sequential art as well. And I think, as you said, I'd like to see more of that happening.
Yeah, I think that would actually help legitimize comics. By bringing in some quote-unquote big-name novelists.
And not just they come in and do one, kind of arc. It's like, yep, this is our event for the week. We've got, John Grisham doing, a run of, Plastic Man.
I was actually thinking more like Get Jiro. I'd like to see them coming in and doing one-off graphic novels.
No, exactly right. But if they do that, but it'd be like, next novel is going to be about a young lawyer who's coming up from the South and takes on an impossible case. And then I'm doing this graphic novel next. And then I'm back to a novel. And then I'm doing some more comics. And then, it just becomes, you'd expect the next novel could have pictures. It may not. But it's just the latest work rather than being seen as that comic thing they did on the side,
Yeah, agreed. So look, all for it. I think read Anthony Bourdain's Get Jiro. I think you won't be disappointed. In any way, shape, or form. I don't think you want to be thinking that you're going to be picking up the greatest thing that ever was written, because it's not. No. But it is a really fun book.
And don't read it on an empty stomach.
And alternatively, don't eat it on a full stomach either.
We wouldn't want to read it at all. It's a book and it's got paper in it.
Well, there's that, but be in the middle, because there's some kind of gut wrenching stuff in there too.
Oh, yeah,
there's some pretty gross stuff in there. But it's a lot of fun. Highly recommended. Everybody go out and buy it. It's actually available everywhere at the moment.
Yeah, just go get it. It's brand new, and at the moment, if you get it, it's still in hardcover for a very reasonable price. It's about $25 for a beautifully bound hardcover book, and you can't really beat that. Even less probably on Amazon.
Very cool indeed. Wow.
Now, that's it.
That's it. I want to know about next week.
Well, next week, we're doing another original graphic novel, but we're not doing a Vertigo one. We're doing a DC original graphic novel next week, which is... wait for it, is Batman Earth One by Jeff Johns and Gary Frank.
I'll be so interested to talk about this one.
Yeah, I've already read this one, so I'm. In fact, we've actually got a couple of original graphic novels coming up.
Yeah,
actually, our next three are original graphic novels, and the two after that aren't even capes.
Wow, there you go. I've actually read Batman Earth One already as well. So it'll be very interesting. As I say, I'll be very interested to talk to you about this one, because I've got some feelings about it.
As do I.
So we'll keep everybody in the dark on that one until next week. But yeah, there's some very interesting thoughts on that one.
Yes.
Well, you know what? We actually came in on time for once.
That's unbelievable. I'm going to use the extra time to go off and start reading Guardians of the Galaxy.
Not right now. We got to sign off first.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Oh, do you know what would make gripping radio? We could sit here and read Guardians of the Galaxy.
Actually, one thing, through the magic of post-production, could you do me a favor and slip this in at the end?
Yeah.
There is a trailer that just came out in the last week for Batman The Dark Knight Returns.
I did see this, yes.
The animated version of this. It's Batman The Dark Knight Returns Part 1.
Yes.
Which is going to be the new animated adaptation of Frank Miller's very, very classic graphic
novel. And I'll insert it in. Actually, do you know what? No, I won't insert it right here. What I'll do is I'll lead the show out with it. How's that?
Exactly. Like we do on the film show.
Yeah.
Let's lead out this show with that. In the meantime, you can find me at therealbits.com. That's the RELLbits.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
That's fantastic. You can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. And we should mention, because we've been a bit remiss mentioning it, we do actually have an email address for this show.
And a Facebook account.
And a Facebook account. So you can write to us at comics@geekactually.com for our feedback. Or our Facebook is?
That'd be facebook.com/behindthepanels.
There you go. And so, yeah, please, all the feedback in the world. We love it. We also have a voicemail line, 02-801-13167. You can also even leave a voicemail and we'll play it on the show, which could be kind of fun as well. And the Skype ID is geek, actually, if you're outside of the country. So you can do it for free even. There's no excuses.
So none whatsoever. None unless whatsoever. You're being attacked by rabid beavers.
But the raccoons will protect you.
With their implausibly large guns.
Absolutely. Richard, I will talk to you again next week.
I'll see you then, David.
Tonight marks the 10th anniversary of the last sighting of the Batman.
All units, robbery in progress, Gotham City Trust.
They call us a gang. Only when they die by our hands will they know Gotham City belongs to the mutants!
Is that?
Batman! Come out here and face me like a man!
What's your name?
Carrie Kelly. Robin.
She's smart. Brave. She's perfect.
These are scary times, Bruce. It's just random violence.
Goes on.
I will tear him limb from limb!
He's in his prime. He'll kill you.
I will show you who rules Gotham City!
I'm not finished yet.
That man.
He's young. He'll walk again.